Joining us on the line now is Michael Gentle. He's a former IT and data privacy professional and the author of a number of best-selling books on business and technology. His new book is called Life Before the Internet, What We Can Learn from the Good Old Days. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you, Anna. Good to have you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. It's great for you to be with us on the show. And an interesting subject to talk about here. A lot of people talk about the good old days before we had mobile phones and internet. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because often people say that, but yet they're very reliant on their mobile phones exactly. And the internet.
Let me just set some context so that we can understand a bit better when we start talking about phones and internet and everything. So in a nutshell, my book, Life Before the Internet, is a look back at a slower, simpler time and a reflection on what we've gained and lost. So why did I decide to write such a book? It was during the pandemic. I was driving once between Lisbon and Geneva. I was listening to my playlists, following my GPS navigation, and looking for the next service station. And then I was thinking, wow, when I was a kid, we didn't have music in the car. We used maps to navigate. And to find the nearest petrol station, well, we stopped and asked the locals. So that's when it hit me that the internet has changed everything, not just travel, but life in general. So I decided to write a book about how we lived before the internet from a sociological, not a technological perspective. And it would be part nostalgia trip for boomers like myself and part revelation for the younger generation, as in, wow, mom, dad, you really used to live like that? Because I think there's actually a lot of surprise. A lot of kids, digital natives today, don't really know how their parents live.
Yeah.
So just before coming back to the issue of mobile phones and smartphones, let me set the premise. The premise for the book is that while the internet is an amazing technology which has greatly simplified our lives, it has also seen the disappearance of many positive aspects of life that we used to enjoy. Now, this is quite normal because the internet is a disruptive technology, like the printing press or the motor car, which radically transformed society. Now, all disruptive technologies come with a price, not financial, but sociological. In other words, we have to give up something from our old way of life in exchange for the benefits of the new technology. Let me illustrate this via two examples. Being permanently connected is clearly a big plus. But on the downside, we receive hundreds of notifications each day and are constantly checking our phones. And I'm tying into your original question, the reliance on the phones and the mobile. So, yeah, we're constantly checking our phones, and this makes it virtually impossible to disconnect. Now, any healthcare professional will tell you that we all need downtime to reconnect with ourselves. Now, before the internet, this wasn't an issue because people were unconnected and therefore unreachable. So downtime was actually built into everyday life. I don't know if you lived in those days, Anna, but I certainly remember we had a lot of me time or think time or off time, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Today, we actually have to make time for it. Another example, work-life balance. Before the internet, you couldn't take work home because everything was paper-based. So once you left the office, hey, you disconnected and enjoyed the rest of your day. Today, however, work is always with you on your phone or your laptop, so it's very difficult to tune out. So as you can see, the benefits on the internet have come with the loss of some positive aspects of unconnected life. And we're talking about really simple things like finding time for oneself or work-life balance.
It's funny because so many of the different things that come up to do with technology and how our lives have changed can sometimes be seen as a positive and sometimes be seen as a negative, depending on how you look at it. The idea that being unreachable was perfectly normal and it was entirely normal and acceptable if nobody knew where you were. But now it sort of seems, as I say, depending on how you look at it, it can be a real advantage that you can know where people are, whether it's in terms of, I don't know, making sure that, that young children are okay, or making sure that elderly parents are okay, you know, kind of knowing where each other are and knowing that everybody's safe can be seen as a positive, of course, can't it?
Absolutely, absolutely can be seen as a positive, but I'm going to now give some examples whereby the positive sometimes hides negatives in the background that can really be worrying. So coming back to what you just said, that the internet can be seen as good or bad depending on what perspective you take. So sometimes people often ask, was life better or worse before the internet? Which is quite a broad question. So I'll give the politician's answer, which is yes and no. If we look in terms of time, cost, and convenience, the internet wins hands down. I mean, what used to take days or weeks now takes hours or minutes, if not seconds. We literally have the world at our fingertips. We are reachable with our loved ones, as you just mentioned. However, if we now look at our health and well-being, well, the picture is not that rosy. For example, permanent connectivity makes it difficult to find time for ourselves, as we've just seen. Children spend hours glued to screens instead of playing outdoors. Work follows you home. You can't escape it. So yes, in terms of good versus bad, life is certainly better today in terms of sheer productivity and convenience. It's a no-brainer. But I think it has come at a cost to our health and well-being. And the most common symptoms that we see are stress, mental health issues, especially in children, and obesity.
Yeah, another thing is social skills or maybe lack of now, you know, with people kind of meeting each other more online, whether that's friendships or even dating. We're seeing that happening more and more online instead of people just going outside and meeting one another face to face.
Absolutely. I mean, you take me back to a time when it was so normal to talk. Before the internet, making friends and dating required face-to-face contact. This is something that you wouldn't even say I've said 20, 30 years ago. It was so obvious. I mean, how else could you meet people besides face-to-face contact? So you actually had to leave the house to meet people. You had to talk to them. And in a sense, you had to make yourself vulnerable. There was no technology to hide behind. Tinder was something you used to light a fire. Now, back then, all of life was based around talking to people. I cannot stress this enough. It started in the playground when you were perhaps 2 or 3 years old and never ended. So people grew up with fairly good social skills and a reasonable degree of self-confidence. Today, unfortunately, we spend our time texting and emailing, so it's no surprise that the current generation has poor social skills and is uncomfortable with spontaneous conversation. I don't know what your experience is, Anna, but certainly I've seen that with a lot. Today's youth prefer writing. Even in the workplace, they will rather send an email and ping-pong back and forth rather than just picking up the phone or talking to people. So yes, coming back to your original observation, social skills in relation to dating and friendship is definitely a what I think in any case is a worrying issue.
Yeah. Another thing which I think definitely can be seen as a positive or a negative, depending on how you look at it, is how the internet has affected travel and our kind of knowledge of travel and the places that we're going to visit. Before the internet, we obviously relied on books, travel magazines, travel guides, all that kind of thing, which was very exciting. I must admit, I enjoyed going to buy the rough guide or the planet, whatever it was called, can't remember now, the books, the travel guides for all the places that you were going to visit. But now, of course, you can get all that information online, which in one way is extremely handy, being able to research a place that you want to visit and maybe decide whether you want to visit or not by the information you find on the internet. But it also takes away the element of surprise a little bit, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I'm a big traveler, and I guess today most of us are. And it's true that travel has lost its power to surprise. It's one could almost say it's become boringly predictable. Not too much exaggeration there, because as you say, before the internet, our knowledge of faraway places was limited to, well, magazines and the odd TV show. Going on vacation in a foreign country was really a surprise because you had no idea what to expect until you got there. The sheer novelty of the experience made it memorable, but even the flight was memorable because we didn't travel a lot by air in those days. But today, as you point out, novelty and surprise are no longer possible because of the deluge of info on the internet. Photos, videos, live stream webcams, you name it, it's all there. So we've already previewed it all online before even stepping onto the plane. So it might still be a great holiday, only a much more predictable one. And I have to admit that this is a case where too much of a good thing can sort of turn against you. There's so much information. Say, yeah, I'd love to learn more about this place I'm going to. But you end up learning so much about it that when you get there, it's a, okay, there's not much surprise here.
The idea that the work situation that you mentioned, the fact that, you know, once you finished work, you would go home and enjoy your evening or weekend or holiday with no contact with work whatsoever, you know, without phones being able to check emails or messages or whatever, which definitely sounds like a positive thing. But depending on, again, I think it can be really, really handy. We're sort of so used to being able to contact each other as and when we need to. So what feels like a kind of work emergency, you don't need to say, well, I can't contact this person for a week. If you feel like you need to know the answer to someone, it's pretty, depending on the industry, I guess, pretty much acceptable that you can contact someone over the weekend or whatever, if it's an emergency, which can be handy.
Which can be handy if it remains exceptional.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, no, the email situation, in fact, hearing you talk about the email and before the phones, it seems that every time you throw up a big plus for the internet, you just have to step back a little bit and you can see it turning into a minus. So it's a question of finding the right balance. I mean, this might sound trite, but all of life is about finding the right balance. So on the subject of email, today we receive up to 100 or more emails per day. Certainly that was my case when I was still working 5 years ago, and I don't think it's improved. And dealing with them can take up to, I don't know, 25% to a third of your time. And that means less time for your actual job. Mm. Now, before the internet, it was the other way around. You spent most of the day doing your work because you never received more than a handful of letters each day. And they were usually handled by secretaries. And for internal communication with colleagues, well, you picked up the phone or you walked over to people's desks to talk to them. A prospect that must have been horrifying to today's younger generation, walking over and talking spontaneously to someone. So it's quite possible that people were more productive before the age of email, paradoxically, not in terms of the output, but in terms of the time they spent doing their actual job. Mm. So, it's in theory, we have a work-life balance because we should know that once we're at home or we sort of off now. But in practice, the two just fuse together into a whole, and it's difficult to really break out of the work versus the home life. That really is. And let me just come back to your earlier question about kids and old parents being reachable. Another example of where too much of a good thing can sort of turn against you. Before the internet, children had no phones, so they were unreachable. They left for school in the morning and they only saw their parents again at the end of the day. So they learned to fend for themselves. I think at the time we called it being street smart. Today, because of permanent connectivity, they have a hard time solving problems on their own. This is really a big issue for the younger generation. Their life has become like a never-ending episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, in which you can always phone a friend when you don't know the answer. Hmm. Now, raising children in such a manner that they don't have the autonomy and skills to be able to fend for themselves, personally as a parent and a grandparent, I think that is a big issue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think we've all been in the situation regularly. If you're out for dinner or with friends or at a party, or and someone has a question about someone. What was the name of that actor who starred in that film? And it's so you know, you can have a discussion for a while, but then inevitably, and it's not always a young person at all, inevitably someone will get out their phone, Google it, there you go, that's his name. And it's very satisfying and useful to be able to do that, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Although I think personally, after a while, it sort of gets in the way of the discussion. For most of these questions, we don't really care who it was, because it doesn't really change the discussion. But someone really has to go on and say, let me find out who that guy was or what the name of the movie was.
Yeah. Something which has changed very much, which obviously will be a huge worry for parents, I guess, is access to pornography, how that has changed over the years. You know, with internet and phones, you know, many years ago, boys might find catalogues that their mum owns with pictures of women in underwear, and that was about it. But of course, now it's quite frightening what children can get hold of very easily for free.
Yeah, no, that is, I think, as any parent will tell you, it's disturbingly easy for children to view porn online. All they need is 10 functioning fingers. So it's really, really an issue. And we all know the harm that can do to young minds. But before the internet, there was porn, of course, but it was in the form of magazines or movies. So you had to physically leave the house to find it. It was also expensive. So children had very limited access to porn. Certainly when you speak about the odd Playboy magazine or lingerie models, I can relate to that. We used to view Playboy magazines in a friend's garage. That was like the high point of the day. I used to look at lingerie models in my mom's home catalog. So that was the extent of porn when we were small. And in all honesty, I'm glad it didn't go much further than that when I see the situation today. So it really is worrying.
Makes you realize how innocent it was then.
Exactly.
And of course, the physicality and being physically active or not, as the case may be, has definitely changed, because in order to see people, in order to go to places, in order to buy things, everything involved needing to leave the house in order to do those things. But now we can see people online, video calls or watching videos transporting us to different places abroad. Obviously, we can buy everything we want online. That's changed and definitely contributed to the obesity crisis.
Yeah, that's actually one of the best examples, in my view, of the unintended consequences of all of the advantages of the internet. The fact that you can just sit on your behind and do all of these things. In a sense, the internet has become the ultimate labor-saving device, because it's effectively eliminated most of the physical activity that we used to have. You gave examples at home of everything you can do. Even at work, to copy a document, you walked over to the photocopier. To send a message, you walked across to the fax machine. So over the course of the day, people were always moving. And we don't realize that it's only when we look at the way people lived in those days, they say, wow, they were always walking and moving and getting up. Today, we sit down for hours on end, and as you say, health problems and obesity. We have to go to the gym for exercise, whereas before the internet, in a sense, life itself was exercise.
Yeah, it's definitely changed a lot. Also, it makes me nervous about reading. You know, I also present a book show and have interviewed many people who have done surveys over the years talking about how little, not just children, adults as well, but it's particularly worrying for children, I think, how little children read. You know, often children are seeing reading as something that they have to do at school, as opposed to choosing to do it for pleasure when they're not at school.
Yeah, that is worrying as well. Once again, I speak as a parent, but also as a person who loves reading. And yeah, most people, they don't read anymore, because if you look around you in the cafe or in the bus or in the waiting room, what are people doing? They're scrolling away on their phones. Now, in their defense, This is hardly surprising because that's exactly what these devices and apps are designed for, to be addictive. That's what they're designed for. And they are very effective at getting people to just keep using scrolling. And before the internet, we didn't have the technology. So the only thing we could do besides daydream and think for ourselves was read books.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone could dispute the fact that all of this reading had great educational value. But I don't think we can say the same about the content found when scrolling on phones. I honestly don't think so. But yeah, that is a big issue. Once again, speaking as a parent.
Yeah. Well, it's a very interesting subject. If people want to get a copy of the book, it's called Life Before the Internet, What We Can Learn from the Good Old Days. And it's by Michael Gentle, who we've been chatting with today. The book is available on our website, tre.radio. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. It's been lovely to chat with you.
Thank you, Anna. It's been lovely talking to you.